The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
When Nicole Sandler sits down to do her show, she's the producer, booking the guests, pulling the audio, planning the show, the engineer, running the controls, troubleshooting any problems, playing the sounds, calling the guests, and she's the webmaster, writing the blog, posting the podcast, maintaining the website, not to mention the host, interviewing the guests, explaining the issues, giving opinions, and calling out the bad guys. And then you get the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com.
Welcome to a Tuesday. Boy, the best laid plans and all that. Progressive Voices had a glitch. And so I don't know if they're back on. They were off the air. We're on the air. I just don't know if we're on Progressive Voices. And I had it perfectly planned where I was going to segue right into a song to get us started today. But as we were, there we go. All right. So that's Progressive Voices. So they're back on. Hi, Progressive Voices. We're all here. Welcome. It's a lovely Tuesday in the neighborhood. All right. Now, let me see if I can find, let me turn this down so I can use this pot, this channel for those of you non-radio people. Come on. Okay, there we go. All right. So where is this video that I was going to play for you? Well, I've got it right here, but bear with me again. Okay, let me move it up to this window. So everything got all blown out of the way it was supposed to work literally seconds before we hit 5 o'clock. So I had stuff to do, but guess what? It looks like we're able to do it. Although I don't have my wonderfully perfectly timed out open. This is from the Parody Project, and I think it speaks really well to what's going on right now. So we'll watch the video, listen to the song, and then we'll explain. There were plans. That's where I went wrong. You are correct, House of Roberts. All right, here we go. Here's the video, and I'm going to have to read to you the beginning because it starts out with just text on the screen. But it goes like this. The Build Back Better plan would address climate change and infrastructure and reduce costs for childcare, prescription drugs, health care, worker housing, and higher education, paid for with a fairer tax code. West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin says, no way.
Problem with Manchin, he's got a big crush on coal. His income's enhanced half a million a year or so. And when Button rolls around and there is no common ground, he's saying no, stop the show. Keep his entitlements at bay, he keeps saying that again and again. And not so long ago, he was pushing Wall Street bailouts then. And you know there's no excuse, and with him you're gonna lose and never win. That's how it's been. Says the cost is too high, didn't face him at all before. When your money was flowing to the top and into corporate control. The bonus and the plan won't put money in his hands, so there you go. But no.
A broken America should build a monument to Joe Manchin's massive ego. Overwhelming majority of Americans support Build Back Better Act. Climate advocates warn Joe Manchin is holding a gun to the planet's head.
Better wages, it's tax cuts for the rich. There's no providing health care because it makes his donors bitch. No Medicare expansion, no lowering degrees. Don't worry about your health care, go find your own
asystole. Wow.
Totally free. And it's all because he's in his mansion. His daughter's telling him how to roll.
And cinema too, don't forget.
His constituents don't matter. He takes care of his own bankroll. To build a better plan is right where it began with him. And no.
I told
you so.
Aha, the Parody Project. with their take on your mama don't dance and your daddy don't rock and roll and old people like me remember the original song. And there you go. Here we are. And guess what Nancy Pelosi did today? She told her members, you're going to have to cut down the package a bit because we just can't do $3.5 trillion. You know what I say to that, right?
Bullshit.
We absolutely can. We did this last week. Do we need to go through it again? Well, maybe we will, but not today. I'm trying not to be too discouraged. I'm trying to think positive thoughts, but it's really difficult to do these days. So Nancy Pelosi, let me see if I can't find everything. Everything got screwed up in the 2 minutes before the show when I couldn't get the Progressive Voices stream up. And now I can't get my notes up. Okay, lovely. Oh, they popped up and they disappeared. Hold on. Whatever. Nancy Pelosi last night sent her caucus a Dear Colleagues letter. And in it, she basically said, we're going to have to really come down off of this $3.5 trillion price tag. Well, you know, we brought this up last week, and I forget who first suggested it. But the more I think about it, the more I like the idea of, fine, you need to cut it down? Cut it in half. Cut $3.5 trillion down to $1.75 trillion, and instead of going for 10 years, cut it down where it's a five-year program. So it'll be 5 years. Looks like our internet stream almost went out, but I guess we're back. Okay. Sorry, I guess it's going to be one of those days. Lucky us. Yay. anyway, if they front-loaded everything, don't cut anything, but cut down instead of 10 years, it's a five-year plan, and you put everything in place fast, get it going early, so when the 5 years is about to be up, they can't take away from you all the benefits that you have. You know what? That's the way to do it, but again, nobody's asking me. And instead, Nancy Pelosi is talking about, what they can cut out of the program, and it's not okay. Now, the other part of it, I mean, there's so many different pieces moving at the same time. And as frustrated as I am with Joe Biden's carrying out of his plan, I don't see a plan there. It could be worse, right? It could be worse. We could still have Donald Trump, and I can't even fathom that idea. I wouldn't be sitting here, frankly, if he somehow wound up back in the Oval Office. I don't think my mind, body, and soul could take it. But if the Democrats can't get their shit together enough to pass legislation that is wildly popular with the American people, that polls so high, everybody's in favor of it. The only people who don't want it are Mitch McConnell and his followers. And his followers, I mean his, you know, the Republicans in Congress. Because none of them think for themselves. I know sometimes the fact that the Democrats in Congress tend to have minds of their own is frustrating. But what's more frustrating are those, Stepford Congress people who don't do anything without the approval of their dear leader. I mean, what's the difference between Mitch McConnell and Kim Jong-un? Really? You know, nobody does anything without their approval. Well, it seems like no Republican in Congress has the balls to step up and say, you know what, screw you, McConnell. I'm going to do what's right for the country because I don't answer to you. I don't answer to the former guy. I answer to the American people, and I swore an oath to the Constitution. But they're letting everything go to shit. And what really frightens me is what happens when they have their stooges in place during the next elections. So something very interesting happened today. I think it happened yesterday where these op-eds were written and posted, but I think they're in today's papers. And when I say op-eds, I'm talking about one in the New York Times and one in the Washington Post. And they're both written by Republicans. In fact, I'm going to share them with you. They're not very long, but they go together. And I've got to think, you know I can be gullible sometimes, but I got to think that it was coordinated, that Max Boot wrote his for the Washington Post, and Christy Todd Whitman, former governor of New Jersey, and Miles Taylor, who was the chief of staff at the Department of Homeland Security. He's also the guy who wrote the book, first the New York Times editorial, and then the book as anonymous, saying the adults are here. They teamed up to write the one in the New York Times. And they're both saying basically the same thing. We'll start with the New York Times, okay? Again, it's Christy Todd Whitman and Miles Taylor. The headline reads, "We are Republicans. There's only one way to save our party from pro-Trump extremists." And here's what they wrote. "After Donald Trump's defeat, there was a measure of hope among Republicans who opposed him that control of the party would be up for grabs and that conservative pragmatists could take it back. But it's become obvious that political extremists maintain a vice-like grip on the national and state parties and the process for fielding and championing House and Senate candidates in next year's elections. Rational Republicans are losing the party civil war. And the only near-term way to battle pro-Trump extremists is for us all to team up on key races and overarching political goals with our longtime political opponents, the Democrats. This year, we join more than 150 conservatives, including former governors, senators, congressmen, cabinet secretaries, and party leaders, in calling for the Republican Party to divorce itself from Trumpism or else lose our support, perhaps with us forming a new political party. Rather than return to founding ideals, Republican leaders in the House and in many states have now turned belief in conspiracy theories and lies about stolen elections into a litmus test for membership and running for office. Starting a new center-right party may prove to be the last resort if Trump-backed candidates continue to win Republican primaries. We and our allies have debated the option of starting a new party for months and will continue to explore its viability in the long run." Yes, please. Sorry, that was me. "Unfortunately, history is littered with examples of failed attempts at breaking the two-party system, and in most states today, the laws do not lend themselves easily to the creation and success of third parties." Well, that's true. "So for now," they write, "the best hope for the rational remnants of the Republican Party is for us to form an alliance with Democrats to defend American institutions, defeat far-right candidates, and elect honorable representatives next year, including a strong contingent of moderate Democrats." I'd strike the word moderate from this, but I didn't write it. I'm just reading it. But in my version, I cross out moderate because there are no moderates. Sorry. "It's a strategy that has worked," they continue in the New York Times. "Mr. Trump lost re-election in large part because Republicans nationwide defected, with 7% who voted for him in 2016, flipping to support Joe Biden." I have a ding here somewhere, don't I? Yeah. A margin big enough to have made some difference in key swing states. "Even still, we don't take this position lightly. Many of us have spent years battling the left over government's role in society, and we will continue to have disagreements on fundamental issues like infrastructure spending, taxes, and national security. Similarly, some Democrats will be wary of any pact with the political right." I think I need that ding again. Yeah. "But we can agree on something more fundamental. Democracy. We cannot tolerate the continued hijacking of a major U.S. political party by those who seek to tear down our republic's guardrails or who are willing to put one man's interests ahead of the country." Hello. "We cannot tolerate Republican leaders in 2022 or in the presidential election in 2024 refusing to accept the results of elections or undermining the certification of those results should they lose. To that end, concerned conservatives must join forces with Democrats on the most essential near-term imperative, blocking Republican leaders from regaining control of the House of Representatives. Hell yeah. Damn yeah. Some of us have worked in the past with the House Republican leader, Kevin McCarthy, but as long as he embraces Mr. Trump's lies, he cannot be trusted to lead the chamber, especially in the run-up to the next presidential election. And while many of us support and respect the Senate Republican leader, Mitch McConnell, I don't. Why would they? Sorry, I'm just reading their words. It is far from clear that he can keep Mr. Trump's allies at bay, which is why the Senate may be safer remaining as a divided body rather than under Republican control. Yes, it would definitely be safer as a divided body than under Republican control, because they might have some kind of respect for Mitch McConnell. I don't know how, but, you know, there's no accounting for tastes. Anyway, back to the rest of this column. Again, this is from Christy Todd Whitman and Miles Taylor, two Republicans, heavy-duty Republicans. So they continue, "For these reasons, we will endorse and support bipartisan-oriented moderate Democrats in difficult races like Representatives Abigail Spanberger of Virginia and Alyssa Slotkin of Michigan and Senator Mark Kelly of Arizona, where they will undoubtedly be challenged by Trump-backed candidates. And we will defend a small nucleus of courageous Republicans such as Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger." Wow. "Peter Major and others who are unafraid to speak the truth. In addition to these leaders, this week we are coming together around a political idea, the Renew America Movement, and will release a slate of nearly two dozen Democratic, Independent, and Republican candidates we will support in 2022. So it goes on like this. This is a longer thing. Now, I disagree with Miles Taylor and Christy Todd Whitman. Well, of course I do. They're Republicans. I don't agree with anything they say. And the fact that they're pushing for the unicorn that they call moderate Democrats, who don't exist, the people they cited are all, as Howie Klein would describe them, from the Republican wing of the Democratic Party. They're not moderate. They're not centrists. They're conservative corporate Democrats. But again, I would take them over the Trumpers, right? In a second, without a moment's hesitation. But let me share the other one, because the other, the op-ed that ran concurrently, this one that I just read to you was in the New York Times. I'll post them both with the podcast, where I posted at NicoleSandler.com. Today it'll be at /10-12-21, because that's the date. Hello. But the one in the Washington Post is written by Max Boot. Again, somebody of whom I am not a fan. I normally do not read his column, but today I made an exception because the headline reads, "I'm no Democrat, but I'm voting exclusively for Democrats to save our democracy." And Max Boot wrote, "There appears to be a consensus in Washington that the success of the Biden presidency will hinge on the outcome of the massive infrastructure and social spending bills now before Congress. That may be true, but their fate won't affect how I vote. I'm a single-issue voter." I love this line. "I'm a single-issue voter. My issue is the fate of democracy in the United States. Simply put, I have no faith that we will remain a democracy if Republicans win power. Thus, although I'm not a Democrat, I will continue to vote exclusively for Democrats, as I have done in every election since 2016, until the GOP ceases to pose an existential threat to our freedom." Those are pretty, pretty strong words from someone like Max Boot. Really. He goes on. He says, "If you want to know why I'm so alarmed about the current state of my former party, look at the dueling documents released last week by the Senate Judiciary Committee about the former guy's attempt to pressure the Justice Department into helping to overturn the 2020 election. Committee Democrats issued a lengthy report documenting all of the pressure Trump applied to acting Attorney General Jeffrey Rosen to substantiate bogus claims of election fraud. Assistant Attorney General Jeffrey Clark was nauseatingly eager to cooperate by sending a letter to Georgia's governor and legislative leaders urging them to convene a special session to appoint pro-Trump electors in a state that Trump lost. When Rosen wouldn't cooperate, Trump threatened to replace him with Clark. He's laying it all out here that I hope some Republicans read what he's writing, because he's preaching to the choir with me, of course. He continues, Trump wasn't subtle about what he wanted. Quote, according to Rosen, Trump opened the January 3rd meeting by saying, quote, one thing we know is you, Rosen, aren't going to do anything to overturn the election. Trump was dissuaded from carrying out this scheme only by the threat that the Justice Department leaders would resign in protest. In attempting to enlist DOJ for personal political purposes in an effort to maintain his hold on the White House, the Democrats wrote, Trump grossly abused the power of the presidency. And it continues like that. So you get the idea. I'll post the full columns, the links to them, on the blog today, so you can read them in their entirety. So these are in the New York Times and the Washington Post, two very strong Republican voices saying, if you want to maintain some semblance of a democracy, you need to vote exclusively for Democrats. This batch of so-called Republicans cannot be allowed to take power. Because as Max Boot rightly says, if they do, our democracy is done. It's over. It's it. How did Madeleine Kahn say? Kaput. Yeah, there is no chance. The only chance that I think that we have of saving this experiment is if we remove these seditionists from office. And they are that. They're insurrectionists. They're seditionists. They are in the midst of a slow-moving coup. I know it's almost like a cliche at this point, but there's no other way to describe it. That's exactly what's going on. And honestly, if they don't stop it, we are truly screwed. Here's a great example. You know, the fact that anybody gives Donald Trump any bit of credence blows my mind. This guy not only lost the presidential election, he lost the Senate, he lost the House. You know, when Donald Trump took office, they had all three, just like the Democrats do now, only they had a majority. We were just barely, you know, in the lead. He lost all of that. And yet, you know, all he does, he lies about everything, and they swear to his lies. It's inconceivable. But the gaslighting is how they do it. So Donald Trump, every time he opened his mouth, lies. He lies to further his propaganda, or as George W. used to say, catapult the propaganda. You say something often enough, you know, people believe it. Ugh. I thought we were done with that. Just look at the difference. The way, you know, what happened as we were pulling out of Afghanistan was tragic. It was tough. It should, you know, I would say you don't want anyone to die, but we were exiting from a war at a nation that we had occupied for 20 years, and we didn't win that war. No, we actually lost. And I'm sorry, I'm not the biggest history buff, but even I know that when a conquering force retreats, it never, you know, it's not like they wave at you from the train station. It's war. People get hurt. People get killed. At least we were in a war in Afghanistan. And thank you, Joe Biden, for getting us out of it, for finally ending the endless war. But I want you to think about how the Republicans react, right? With Benghazi, they spent how many months of hearings after hearings for four people who were killed? Tragic situation, I agree, but it's not like it was intentional, and it wasn't, it happened. Shit happens. And this was a CIA outpost. You know, there's all kinds of other factors, but they dragged Hillary Clinton through the mud, you know, pilloried her with questions in a hearing for over 11 hours straight. And just, it was a Benghazi Tourette's, I used to call it, because everything was, oh, Benghazi, Benghazi. Well, fuck you, Benghazi. You know what? You over-litigated it and litigated it some more, and they wasted so much time that you would have thought, you know, that we dropped a nuclear bomb on this CIA outpost in Benghazi. Okay. So just remember how they reacted to that. Got it? And how they've reacted to Afghanistan. Got it? Now think back to Trump. Trump did all kinds of military incursions that he never took ownership of. And a big one was the lives of four servicemen were lost in Niger, right? Niger. And the way he reacted, the way he spoke to the families of the people who were killed was just criminal. I mean, it's sickening, like nausea inducing. So here, I'm going to play for you a news report. Hold on one second. Let me bring up the video so those of you who are watching a video stream can see it. And you'll remember clearly what happened. There was one soldier who was killed. What? Niger, thank you. There was one soldier from down here, from South Florida, from Miami, who was killed. His name was LaDavid something. I just remember it was an unusual name, LaDavid. And LaDavid's wife was so put out and incensed by the way Trump spoke to her when he finally called, because he didn't call the families of these four fallen soldiers. And the big question was, why were we in Niger in the first place? So here's a CNN, I think it's a CNN report. It's some TV report on what happened here. All right, here's this.
Carrying an American flag and his unborn child, the widow of Sergeant LaDavid Johnson said goodbye as he was laid to rest in Florida. A quiet moment amidst a political storm that has overshadowed questions about how he died in Niger.
Right.
A friend of mine for a long time.
It began Monday when Donald Trump was questioned about his silence on the almost two-week-old incident.
Yeah.
And whether he'd even called the families.
I like to call when it's appropriate.
When it's
I think
appropriate?
I'm able to do it.
Trump called Johnson's widow the next day.
Yeah.
And the controversy escalated when a Florida congresswoman revealed what he said.
But you know, he must have known what he signed up for.
He must have known what he signed up for.
To a grieving widow.
Really?
For days, Trump, the White House spokeswoman, and the chief of staff, John Kelly, a former general, all criticized the congresswoman, though they essentially confirmed her account.
The White House has handled this pretty ineptly from top to bottom.
You think?
Just a series of mistakes that have made that original question, which was bad enough for the White House, that just made it worse and worse through their handling of it.
That original question, what happened in Niger? U.S. troops have been in the West African country since 2013.
Why?
Helping fight Al-Qaeda and ISIS affiliates in the region.
Sure.
Four Special Forces soldiers, including Johnson, were killed there October 4th. It happened near a village along the border with Mali. The soldiers were ambushed by up to 50 militants. Sergeant Johnson was somehow separated and killed. His body found more than a kilometer and a half away 48 hours later.
And we need answers. We need to find out why a routine mission in Niger turned deadly.
The FBI is now investigating. And that original question, asked repeatedly this week, remains unanswered.
Yeah.
What did the president know about the mission?
To some extent, Donald Trump has avoided having to answer that question
simply
by virtue of the fact that the week is being consumed with his response to the families. But at some point, he's going to need to answer that question.
For his part, the president took another shot at Congresswoman Frederica.
All right. So you get the idea. So he was an asshole to the families. And that's the story that the media ran with. Not what happened to these four soldiers. And he was never held accountable for that. But that's how Trump dealt with that. Not by, you know, comforting the families of four fallen soldiers who were killed for whatever reason they were in this African nation. In danger. But I played that for you because I want to contrast it with a message he sent out yesterday. So apparently yesterday was Ashley Babbitt's birthday. You know who Ashley Babbitt is, or was. She was the woman who was part of the insurrection, who broke into and entered the Capitol building and was attempting to break through the lobby to the House of Representatives, where are the members of Congress were right on the other side of the glass. They broke the glass. She was headed through the broken glass where she was not allowed, and she was shot and killed, as she should have been. Okay? You think about those soldiers who were there for whatever reason, ostensibly protecting us, protecting the nation. You saw he was hostile to the family members. This is Donald Trump recording a message yesterday about Ashley Babbitt, somebody who, you know what? You could say she was guilty of treason, and the punishment for treason is death. She attempted to break into and enter the House of Representatives to overturn an election. And here's what Trump said yesterday.
We must all demand justice for Ashley and her family.
What?
So on this solemn occasion, as we celebrate her life, we renew our call for a fair and nonpartisan investigation into the death of Ashley Babbitt.
Yeah, I got your investigation right here.
I offer my unwavering support to Ashley's family.
Why?
And call on the Department of Justice.
She was trying to overturn an election. She was trying to break in to the House of Representatives.
Like all Americans, you deserve a fair process.
I can't. I just can't listen to him anymore. So you know what? Instead of listening to the rest of his words, I got a little song for Donald Trump. Sing along, everybody.
I just need you to shut the fuck up, because nobody asked you, bitch. I need you to shut the fuck up, bitch.
Shut the fuck up, bitch.
Just shut the fuck up, bitch.
Shut the fuck up, bitch.
Shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up.
Bow, bow.
Shut the fuck up.
Shut the fuck up.
Bow, bow.
Shut the fuck up.
Shut the fuck up.
Bow, bow.
Oh, and it just ends like that. All right. I'm going to bring in our guest because I'll get him to sing Shut the Fuck Up. But first, we got to find him. Harvey, where's Harvey?
Well, where is he?
Where is who?
Where is Harvey?
Oh, you mean Harvey J.K.
Yeah, Harvey.
Well, he's coming up right now on the Nicole Sandler Show.
Harvey. All right, Harvey J.K. Hold on, I got to get all our little chyrons and everything up here and say, hey, Harvey J.K., I saw you snicker when I started playing the Shut the Fuck Up song, because you didn't know what was coming, did you?
I don't think I snickered. I think I was on the verge of hysterics, actually.
You know, I say that moments.
That's a great song. I think I'm going to go to bed tonight humming that one.
I'll send it to you if you want. It's something that
Please do.
I will, because it has many applications, especially at a time like this. Jeez. You know, sometimes you just need it. Sometimes the fuck you song is not enough, because that's sweet. Sometimes you need a little more oomph, and that's when you go for the, you know, shut the fuck up, bitch. You know, some extreme.
Can you play me just a little bit more of the shut the fuck up?
I just need you to shut the fuck up, because nobody asked you, bitch. I need you to shut the fuck up, bitch. Shut the fuck up, bitch. Just shut the fuck up, bitch. Shut the fuck up, bitch.
It's hard to sit still when this is going. You gotta dance.
Shut the fuck up, shut the fuck up, shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up, shut the fuck up, shut the fuck up.
Bow, bow. And it just ends like that.
You need to create the Nicole Sandler Singers.
Yeah, well, we can bring people in and, you know, we've got enough to put together a little playlist. You know, I do have my Chris Isaak musical intros. Did you ever hear? Do you ever hear those? Like this one? Oh, it would help if I did this.
Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. And once she grabs, she won't let go. Rock,
see?
Rock. A rock and Nicole. A rock, rock, a rock and Nicole.
Can you name the movie that Chris Isaak had a cameo in, or at least a small role in?
It's Silence of the Lambs.
Rock, rock, rock and Nicole.
He was in a number of movies, but yes, he was in Silence of the Lambs. Okay. He was one of the cops when Hannibal Lecter was in the cage in the middle of the room. He was one of the cops who wanted to take him out. I don't know if Chris was killed, but that's when Hannibal Lecter escaped. He was one of those cops.
He was in That Thing You Do.
Oh, he was in That Thing You Do too.
He played a Christian music recording guy.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He's the guy who recorded the first rendition of the song That Thing You Do.
Oh, okay. I didn't remember that. But yeah, no, I've Chris is a friend, and I've interviewed him many times.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. What? Yes. Yeah. Pick up the microphone. Yes.
May I access my personalized microphone?
Yes,
now?
You may. You may. Okay. Harvey David. David.
We've met.
We have met.
We're old friends. Yes. Hey, Harvey, how you doing?
I'm okay. How are you doing?
So,
yes.
You mentioned earlier you were not a student of history, but in regard to the Joe Biden's withdrawal from Afghanistan,
yes.
You might want to ask Harvey about the French withdrawal from Algeria and the English withdrawal from India, because those went no better and in many cases much worse than our withdrawal from Afghanistan. As you said, no country that loses a war
has a lovely departure.
Has a celebration on their way out of town.
Yeah, that's true. It does not happen that way.
Yeah. In fact, the British withdrawal from India was one of the great nightmares of the mid-20th century.
Well, you know, wars are ugly. And even ending of wars, especially when you're the losing force and they want you out of their country, it's not, you know, a send-off with champagne and flowers. It's ugly. War is ugly. So the difference in reaction from the former guy to the killing of four American soldiers on his watch and this Ashley Babbitt thing, I'm just flummoxed. I mean, I don't expect anything more from him, but wow. What kills me is not him. We've known this about Trump for decades. It's the 74 million or so people who voted for him, the 70% of Republicans who don't believe that Joe Biden legitimately won the election, who believe the former guy's big lie.
Well, earlier today, I was on a local radio show I was here, but zoomed into a radio show down in Madison.
Yeah.
And the host had called me at the very last minute to come on because he thought I might be able to help him make sense of the fact he had driven over to Iowa over the weekend.
Oh, God. Did he go to the rally?
To a MAGA rally
with
Trump. The newspapers estimated 25,000 turned out outside of Des Moines. And he thought it might have been underestimated, the size of the crowd. And, you know, how does one make sense of that? And the better sense is the kind of years and years and years in which the Democrats really have failed to address the working people of the Midwest. And, you know, it's going to take a long time to undo that. And right now it seems nearly impossible in light of the ways in which Trump has brought these folks into a movement, a cult-like movement, really. But I'll also say that the big question would be, is this a movement that others can inherit, or is it truly just built around a single figure?
Your answer is sitting up in Tallahassee, or he's probably somewhere else in the country fundraising, because Governor Moron Death Sentence is never here. He jets around the country.
Oh,
fundraising,
he's running,
because he's running. He's up for re-election in 22, and then you know, everyone thinks he's going to run for president in 24. And he is a mini Trump. He is rude. Yeah. He's condescending. He's nasty. He's stupid, and he shouldn't be, because he went to Harvard. He's got to have something up there, but it doesn't show, because he's a fucking moron.
My younger daughter went to Harvard and Harvard Law School, and I'm sure she'd be happy to tell you that
not everybody there is smart.
So did Ben Shapiro. He went to one of those kinds of things.
Yeah.
Well, Josh Hawley went to Stanford and then Yale. And
Yeah, a lot of them get in on legacies. You know, they had a parent who went or whatever. I think seeing how some of these people turn out, Ted Cruz.
Ted Cruz, you know, yeah.
Right? That I no longer think just because someone went to Harvard that they're super smart. There's a difference between book smart and common sense smart. These people, I don't believe are either. Ron DeSantis... It just kills me. He's pushing the monoclonal antibody treatment, which is all well and good. If you get sick, if I were to come down with COVID, I would want that. But you know what I've learned? Each dose costs many, many thousands of dollars. And to effectively treat someone, it takes on order of like 7 or 8 doses.
Oh, my God.
Right? Whoa. So you're talking tens of thousands of dollars here, at least. The vaccine costs $20. And it's free to us. So,
you really do have to wonder at what moment in time, and it surely had to do with, although Trump could easily have exploited the vaccine to his advantage, given it was his presidency that commissioned this pursuit.
Yep.
But you really have to wonder what it was in those moments. Somebody's going to have to write a good book on this, about what it was that led these right-wing assholes, and I mean the likes of DeSantis and others, and what's his name, Abbott down in Texas?
Yes.
To be so absolutely hostile to the easy way out, you know?
You know, look, today, so you got Abbott. The whole thing, it's like a comedy of errors. So you got DeSantis here, who now is still threatening to go after any companies that have a vaccination requirement, like a lot of concert halls. Say that you want to come in, you have to show proof that you're fully vaccinated or a current clean test plus wear a mask. Well, now DeSantis is saying those companies that include the Broward Center for the Arts and a number of other, big theaters, that he's going to go after them and fine them $5,000 per occurrence. So each person who is required to show their vaccine card.
Yeah.
That allegedly he's going to fine them $5,000 per person. So if a show has a capacity of 15,000 people, that's 15,000 times 5,000. And it's asinine. People are dying because of this. And so Greg Abbott today decides to put in an executive order and say and prohibit any vaccine mandates.
Well, our brilliant right-wing Republican Senator Ron Johnson said something to the effect of, there's no health crisis, despite the fact that the hospitals in Wisconsin, the emergency room ICU units, those kind of units are full up.
Right.
I mean, I if you had ever said to me that this, if you had ever, you couldn't have written a science fiction novel.
No.
To best this.
No, because a novel like of a dystopian future with Donald Trump as president 8 years ago would have been so inconceivable that if someone presented that to a publisher, they'd be laughed out of the office.
Right. Or one would have had to present it as like a comedy book.
Right.
You know,
right. Like
spoof.
A dark comedy cult movie, like a B late night, midnight movie that, because it's so stupid. The idea is just so absurd. But here we are. But so I have a little dilemma, Harvey K. Before the pandemic hit, we had tickets to see Todd Rundgren. Okay, Todd Rundgren.
Yeah, right.
God.
He actually
produced
one of my favorite songs.
Okay, which one? Hello, It's Me. I saw the light.
I just want to bang on my drum all day.
A bang on the drum. Really? That's such a goofy song.
It is goofy, but you know what?
It's not a real,
if you've been, when I was deeply embedded in all of that book writing, which I'm not right now, there was nothing nicer than at the end of the day to put that on and just let loose.
Well, he doesn't consider that one of his masterpieces, just in case you were wondering. But anyway, Todd Rundgren, he's in his 70s. Look, these guys are not going to be around much longer, and I don't know that I want to see him when he's 78 years old on the stage. This, I figure, is really going to be my last chance. And he's doing a great show. He's doing one side of one of his big albums, and then the other half of the show is like the hits. So the show that we had tickets for last June was canceled, obviously. Yeah. When they rebooked the tour. It was like in February or March, and the show is October 23rd. And I'm thinking, no problem by October 23rd. I mean, when we were talking, remember Biden was talking about 4th of July, we'll all be able to get together. It was pre-Delta. Well, now October 23rd is 2 weeks away, and I don't know what to do. I want to go.
It's indoors or outdoors?
It's indoors. Okay, this is a typical Florida thing. Florida, Miami Beach has the Jackie Gleason Theater. Sorry, somebody's calling. Has the Jackie Gleason Theater. It's where Jackie Gleason did his show for years. Remember, he'd say, Miami Beach audiences are the greatest audiences in the world. Now, I know a lot of people are too young. They don't remember.
Right,
but Jackie Gleason, the Honeymooners, Ralph Cramden, was a national treasure.
Yes.
And so you educate them. This is who Jackie Gleason was. We have this landmark theater. They rebranded it. They call it the Fillmore at the Jackie Gleason Theater. There's no Fillmore down here in Florida. There was the Fillmore East in New York. There was the Fillmore West in San Francisco. It was Bill Graham's place. It was legendary. It has no bearing on South Florida. There's no history here. But they throw on the Fillmore at the Jackie Gleason Theater, thinking that that'll give it credibility with the kids or something. They don't know what the Fillmore is either. That was before their time. So I get bugged by these little things, and I shouldn't.
I can tell. I can tell, yeah.
It bothers me. Just let it be the Jackie Gleason Theater, right?
Well, I mean, funny, because Ralph Cramden, what was the, quick, give me the actor's name, remind me.
Ralph Cramden was Jackie Gleason, the Honeymooners.
Yeah, no, but remind me, sorry, the other.
Ed Norton. Art Carney.
I met him. Oh, very late in his life, I met him. I think he was, I don't know if he had family out in Long Beach, New York, or whatever, but I got to meet him, and I said to him that I was just a kid, little kid, but to be able to see that show, it was like this, somehow, it was just so humane, in spite of people might say, you know, some of the language regarding, you know, to the moon, you know, that idea that he was going to send it to the moon. But it was just so, it was just great. Absolutely.
And of course,
great.
So
when you say Jackie Gleason, I immediately think of Ed Norton. Yeah.
And this is Jackie Gleason.
Where is Harvey?
That's Jackie Gleason.
You mean Harvey?
Oh, that is Jackie Gleason.
Yeah.
Harvey.
Oh, I'm honored that he would take the time to do that.
He did it for you. Came back from the dead to record that for you, Harvey J.K. So anyway, that's my little annoyance over the name of the Jackie
Gleason.
Well,
this dilemma you have.
But going to see Todd Rundgren. Yeah.
I will tell you that what I would do, but I'm not telling you should do what I would do.
Right,
I wouldn't go.
I know.
And I have a booster. I've already had
I had a booster too.
Yeah, but I've
been boosted for a couple of months already.
Yeah.
I got boosted before they approved the boosters. So, you know, we're both boosted. And what I'm hearing is that tours are selling. People are buying tickets, but that half the place doesn't show up. So it's very spread out.
Yeah.
Allegedly, they require masks. I don't know. It's still, you know, it's still.
Well, here's
two
a
weeks
thought.
Away.
Here's a thought. As long as you already have the tickets, right?
Yes.
Well, here's a thought. So let's imagine you and David are going to go, right?
Yeah, well.
So imagine you and David go, counting on half the people not turning up.
Right.
And let's suppose you get there, and it turns out you're in there, and it's jam-packed.
Then we can leave.
You can leave after 15 minutes.
Right. We can stay for a few
songs.
Something
like that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. We can do that. We can go out, have a it's 10 days before my birthday. You just had a birthday, too. Happy birthday.
Just this past weekend.
I know.
October 9th.
Happy birthday. Well, mine's coming up November 4th. So this will be, you know, my birthday night out, our celebration. And we can go to dinner, sit outside. There's a wonderful Italian restaurant down there that we love that we can go to. And then go to the theater. And if it turns out it's crowded and people are there, I can sadly leave. See a few songs and then leave. But, you know, I'm not going to be able to sell the tickets now. It's not like, you know.
Would you be willing to tell me in the midst of this broadcast what year you were born?
59. I was born November 1959. So I was born in the 50s, but I only lived, you know, a month and a half.
Yeah, no, the reason I asked is November 4th was part of my bar mitzvah weekend. So I thought maybe if you were born in, it would have been 1962.
No, I was two then. But
yeah, I was 13 in 62.
But you know,
my bar mitzvah was in the wake of the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Oh, wow. Oh, boy. As I was preparing,
I kept asking myself, huh?
Yeah.
Am I going through all this for no good reason? And the other thing was that my Haftorah portion was that of Noah, which, of course, is the flood. So disaster bond, you know, it's just fortunately neither one, you know.
Yeah, I'm going to make your head explode here. You know who else has a birthday on November 4th?
Who?
Art Carney.
Wow. Talk about small world,
right?
Well, you probably know who I share a birthday with on October 9th.
Oh, John Lennon.
And?
Sean Lennon.
And?
And?
Jackson Brown.
Oh, Jackson Brown. I did know that. Yes.
Yeah.
And you saw, you know, I posted the pictures.
But
Jackson
he's a year
Brown.
Older than I am. Jackson
oh, is he?
Brown, so.
You know, it's amazing how old. I'm sorry. I'm not calling you old, but yeah. Who was it? I just saw somebody, you know, 75. Oh, Daryl Hall. Hall & Oates. Daryl Hall is 75 years old.
You're kidding.
I'm not kidding.
Well, that's weird.
We're getting old.
I always thought he was younger than I am.
Daryl Hall is 75 years old. There's just something not right there. But then again, what? Jagger is like 78 prancing around the stage. You notice how we're not talking politics right now. You know, it's I do everything these days to avoid talking about this because it's so upsetting. I would rather sit here and talk about music or talk about birthdays or talk about whether or not to go to the concert because of the COVID than talk about what's going on in D.C. But you know what? That's what we're supposed to be talking about. So let me ask you this.
Okay.
What the fuck are the Democrats doing?
I can honestly say I have no fucking idea. What was that song you opened up with?
I just need you to shut the fuck up. Nobody
well,
asked
we need
you,
them
bitch.
To do the opposite. We need them to start.
Do something.
Doing something.
And not telling them to cut it as Nancy Pelosi did today. What the hell? Oh, you got to pare it down. Yeah. Really? What are you going to cut? You're going to cut out child education?
I knew this was coming, but. There's one version of the cut that's not as evil as some kind of eliminating program.
Yeah.
And that is, it's $3.5 trillion over 10 years.
10 years. Cut it in half over 5 years.
Right. That's... And then if you're lucky enough to not only be back in control of Congress and win the presidency.
You extend it.
You renew it. Absolutely.
Exactly.
Because you can then run on the fact that if you elect Republicans,
this all goes away.
You're going to lose
everything,
this and that.
Exactly. Yeah. And I don't even know if they're talking about it, but this is what I've been pushing. This is my solution. I didn't come up with it, but it's the one I adopted. It makes the most sense. Cut it instead of $3.5 trillion over 10 years, $1.75 trillion. Over five.
Right.
You front load everything. You get it all going fast. And then you say, really, you want to lose all of this stuff?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And by the way, every day that passes, they are digging a deeper and deeper hole for the Democratic Party and American democracy.
I know. And it scares the shit out of me.
It does. It really does scare the shit out of me, too. And the scary part, here's the thing, you know, I'm sure you have friends on the left, or at least, you know, people on the left who say to you, well, they didn't really want to pass it anyhow.
Yeah, that's bullshit.
This was all a front. Okay.
Bullshit.
And that's bullshit.
But I will tell you,
the behavior of the last 9 months contributes to that kind of thinking.
Yeah.
Because let's not forget, he was for all those decades in the Senate, a neoliberal.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yes,
and these plans are decidedly not 100%, but the best of these plans emanate from Bernie.
Right. Of course, because Bernie is the chair of the Senate Budget Committee. This is his bill. The Build Back Better bill is Bernie's. Now, Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders, they've worked together for years and they happen to be friends. and they talk. I think they talk more than Obama ever talked to Biden. And he saw these.
I put money on it. They talk more than Biden seems to be talking to
Kamala Harris. I don't know what's going on there. I don't know what's going on there. But you know what? I really worry that he's not going to be in any position to run in 24, and she's not going to be in any position to win in 24.
I'm absolutely with you on that.
I never
understood why he chose her. I just didn't understand it.
Because she was a black woman. That's why.
Well, but she's from California, and there are other black women who would have been more significant.
Yeah. You know, you want a California black woman? Barbara Lee.
Or there was the other woman who had been maybe a majority leader in the assembly there.
Oh,
Karen Bass.
Karen Bass, who is very good, by the way, who is going to leave Congress. She's running for mayor of Los Angeles.
Really?
Yep.
Well, that's a challenging position.
No kidding. And if I had stayed in L.A., if I'd never sold my last house in Los Angeles in Culver City, she would be my congressperson.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I live in the land of woulda, shoulda, coulda. I really do. And I need to stop that. Stop it.
Woulda, shoulda, coulda, Florida. Oh, that's God. It.
Woulda, shoulda, coulda, not come back here. But, you know, things happen for a reason, because if I didn't come back here, I wouldn't have met my husband. So I guess, you know, things happen
for a
reason.
I hope David's hearing what you're saying and appreciates it.
I hope so, too. No, he does. He listens and he appreciates. That I know.
Good. Yeah. That's really good. Right. No, but you know what? To go back to the question, I don't understand why they did not have a strategy to mobilize the cabinet, the House and Senate leadership,
right,
a whole host of left-leaning celebrities, send them out, you know? And by the way, even if you don't want to send them out across the country, because look, the majority of Americans want this plan. They want it.
Mm-hmm.
But what they should have done, here's what Biden should have done. Okay. As soon as he smelled that Manchin was going to be a pain in the ass, right? What he should have done is said, tell you what, I'm coming to West Virginia, because I'm going to sell this plan, and I'm bringing the squad with me.
And I'm bringing Bernie Sanders, because Bernie Sanders got more votes in New Hampshire. He won New Hampshire. He got more votes than Donald Trump did in New Hampshire. He certainly beat Hillary Clinton.
He should have said, I'm coming to West Virginia.
Yep.
And I'll tell you what, Joe Manchin, you can attend, you can be on the platform, but I want you to know that I am going to make the case that if anyone in this state does not support, any leading Democrat does not support this, then the citizens of this state should run them out of town. Okay. Now, by the way, I want you to know that in 1938, Franklin Roosevelt was so outraged at the Southern white supremacist Democrats. He really had hoped FDR to drive them out of the party and create a whole new party, and bring in the man who ended up running for president against him, Wendell Willkie, to be to be maybe even a vice president at some point. But here's the thing. He went down to Georgia. I'm forgetting the exact town he spoke in, but it was a major event.
Okay.
And he said, and everyone knew exactly what he was referring to, because the Georgia white supremacist Democratic establishment was there in attendance. He said, anyone who supports the feudalism that prevails down here supports fascism. Those are FDR's words.
Right.
Well, Biden should take a note. Go out to it. And by the way, he could have really made a case that my understanding is the governor of West Virginia likes these plans, and he's a Republican.
Uh-huh.
They could have brought him on to
the
platform.
The people of West Virgina like these plans.
Of course they do.
Joe Manchin and Kirsten Sinema.
Well, now that's another case, right? Another case. They are two different beasts.
Yep.
Okay. Kirsten Sinema. Everyone laughs when I say this, but I swear I'm serious in good part. That she is looking to make a move to Hollywood.
Oh, God.
She's
not making any friends in Hollywood. Remember, if she wanted to sidle up to Hollywood, she'd be playing, you know, the left side of the aisle.
That may be the case. But look at all the folks who've made masses of money and masses of fame doing nothing.
Yes. Oh, well.
The Kardashians being the prime example.
Oh, God.
So Kirsten Sinema could be like the blonde Kardashian. She's kind of crazy.
She's crazy, but that's all she's got.
Yeah.
She likes showing off her cleavage, too, but so I guess she's got that. Do you see her on the plane? Oh, my God.
Somebody send me the picture. They said you'll get a kick out of this. So, yeah.
Harvey, JK, we're going to say goodbye to the Progressive Voices Network because you hear the music. We're wrapping up. But I'm going to keep you on for a moment. So just stand by. We'll say,
you bet.
Bye, Progressive Voices. We'll see you tomorrow. By the way, I want to ask you about, you're a historian, right?
That's what they say.
Fannie Lou Hamer. You're familiar with her.
Yes, sure.
Tomorrow, I'm speaking with the author of a book about her that's called Until I Am Free. Hers is a fascinating story, and it's about winning the vote. I mean, she was the...
Who's the author?
Keisha N. Blaine.
I believe I've run into her name. Maybe some other people mentioned it to me. Yeah.
Okay. So it's a new book. I think it's just out probably today. I honestly don't have the book. I haven't even started research on it yet.
It could be today. Tuesdays are publishing
day. Yeah, Tuesday's the day. Right. And usually Tuesdays is, you know, Laffy's day. Laffy's on her big road trip to, you know, they're trying to move to Canada. So,
well, you know, it's funny. I saw something today. She posted on Twitter about these tiny cabin-like coffee places.
Right.
And I thought, I wonder what she's doing that she's on the road like this.
They went on a road trip up to Vancouver and surrounding areas.
Oh, wow.
They put in their paperwork 2 years ago to get legal residency. Yeah. And at the time, it was a two-year waiting period. Now it's three. So, hard. It's really difficult to get in, but they're working on it. And so they went up to check out neighborhoods and see where they want to live.
So, my Canadian friends keep saying, when are you coming up? But
it's easier said than done. So they, you know, the reason they can go is because Mr. Laffy is a writer for television. He's actually a writer producer, I think, on the show Naked and Afraid. But so he can do his writing from anywhere. So he can do that. So he wouldn't be taking a job from Canadians. And that's what it's about. She's got two sons, two adult sons, who if they want to go, even though they both have masters, they're both, you know, professional.
Well, maybe the Canadians would like me because I could add to their national income.
That's right.
Because I have a pension and social security.
Right. You're not going to be on their dole. But if the boys, young men, they're in their 30s. If they want to go up there, they have to go back to school. So each place has their rules. I wouldn't qualify to go anywhere because I'm too old and I don't have the money to spend and I'm not going back to school. So I think I'm stuck here.
Your Southern California, Florida body might not like Canada.
And New York. I was born in New York.
Oh, right. I forget that. I forget that.
Right. Yeah.
But you left New York.
I left New York. But I also lived very briefly in Taos, New Mexico, where it was very cold and snowy. And in Salem, New Hampshire, because I programmed a radio station in Boston.
Uh-huh. Okay, cool.
So I've lived everywhere. My husband is the one who's allergic to the cold. I could go somewhere where it's cold. He can't. He's a wimp. He's a weather wimp.
He's a wimp.
A weather wimp. A weather wimp. Oh, all right. I'm procrastinating. There's no good news here. There's nothing to share. Nancy Pelosi told her members who are now, and let me ask you this too. They came back today because they're on recess.
You're about to tell me something I didn't know, so go right ahead.
You probably knew. Both chambers of Congress are on recess this week. The House came back to vote on the passing the temporary raising of the debt ceiling so that we don't fall off the cliff. But they're both out. The Senate comes back Monday. The House comes back Tuesday. With everything in the situation we're in, why are they why are they not in Washington? Why aren't they here doing their work?
They're obviously seriously afraid that they've blown it.
Yeah.
And
they have blown it.
I mean,
I gotta share this with you. Somebody, I probably don't have it. Somebody tweeted, and it was, I think it was like Jake Tapper. It was somebody at CNN said, hold on, let me, Jim Sciutto, that's who it was, tweeted, criminal referrals, quote, will come very fast if people refuse to cooperate with January 6th commission probe, Adam Schiff, tell CNN. Jim Sciutto tweeted that. I retweeted it with the comment, I think they already missed that very fast boat. January 6th was 10 months ago. What the hell? Nothing has happened. Nobody has been prosecuted. These people are going about their lives. And so that they obviously believe that they could do this. They didn't do anything wrong because nobody's in jail.
Well, but you're missing the story here.
What's the story?
Garland is assuming that if Trump gets the presidency, he'll get a seat on the Supreme Court.
That's it. That's what the deal is with Merrick Garland. You know, they're on a mailing list, and the one letter that keeps going back and forth with the subject line of "Where the fuck is Merrick Garland?"
Yeah, people ask me, and I say, "Look, I can't explain it. The guy, I couldn't explain why Biden appointed him Attorney General to begin with, other than he and Barack felt they had an obligation to do something for the guy. I have no idea, you know."
Yeah,
God help us.
Yes.
God, let there be a God and let him help us.
Well, dog, help us. God backwards, dog. And I have more use for dogs than I do for God.
I know that. And maybe you've got an in-house dog, God.
I do. His name is Jackson Brown.
No, I know. I know.
See, it all goes full circle, Harvey. We're back to where we started.
It really does.
I'm glad
we just schmoozed.
This was fun.
I've gotten to the point where I don't even know what to say to people nowadays they say, "Where are the Democrats?"
I know. Well, you know, it's like Laffy's name. Gotta laugh. You gotta laugh because the alternative is I don't want to go there.
Easy for her to say. She's on her way to Canada.
I know, right? But she's gonna have to wait another year.
Maybe she could just request refugee status.
Oh. Well, but she has to have a, I mean, if Trump gets in again, oh my God, I can't believe I'm even saying those words, that is even an idea that is feasible. Just like, you know, this time 4 years ago, thinking there's no way this man.
I was going to say, there's no way Trump will be president again. But that's what I said last time.
There was no way he was going to win. I mean, we were all Barack Obama at that White House Correspondents' Dinner when he's like laughing. He's like, "Yeah, like you're going to be president." And that was the biggest laugh line of the night because it was hysterical. It was inconceivable. And he got the last laugh.
He sure did.
Oh, God.
He sure did.
All right, I'm going to go drown my sorrows.
Okay, say it was good. Tell David it was good to hear his voice.
Will do. Will do.
Great to see you. Thank you for
asking
me to come on.
Thank you, Harvey. It's always a pleasure.
Let's hope in a couple of weeks you can call me back and we can talk seriously about the successes that the Democrats have miraculously achieved.
Of progress being made, right? And that they listened to us and they decided to cut it in half in the time and the money.
Yeah, right.
It's the perfect solution. It's the only solution.
And meanwhile, before you have to leave for Canada, enjoy your summer weather.
Oh, well, I'm in Florida. That's the one thing we have going for us.
Isn't it year-round summer Florida?
It kind of. I mean, it cools down a little bit in the winter. But Sunday morning, I was out on the beach, and it was perfect. It was just gorgeous. It was beautiful.
Very nice.
Day.
Very nice.
I even have.
But it's just for what it's worth.
I have
Wisconsin
tan lines.
Is having an unusually
tan lines,
extended summer. Looks cute, by the way. we're in the high 60s and 70s in October, which is. Definitely not the case. Not supposed to be the case.
Well, because the planet's warming.
Yeah, it is. Who told you that?
I heard it on the internet somewhere.
Okay, I gotta go eat dinner or something.
I gotta do that too. Okay. All right. I'll talk to you soon. Thank you for joining
us
today.
Great
to see you too. Bye, Harvey. All right, and with that, we're done. Thanks, Harvey. And for you, you get to see all the cool. And the gate keeps calling me. All right, I'm going to leave you with the news. Bye, everyone. See you tomorrow. And why is the gate calling?
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Congress is on recess this week, but the House returns to Capitol Hill on Tuesday to vote on the short-term raise in the debt ceiling that passed the Senate last week. After today's vote, they leave again for another week. But it will be a busy day. They'll vote on a package that contains three minor bills, the Pump for Nursing Mothers Act, the Protect Older Job Applicants Act, and the Family Violence Prevention and Services Improvement Act. And along with it, built into the text, a $480 billion increase in the debt limit. That won't be voted on directly. It will be deemed passed as part of the rule that governs the debate for that entire package. Got it? Yeah. Well, speaking of the debt ceiling, officials had predicted that it would be reached on December 3rd, which is also, conveniently, the deadline for when the government runs out of money again. Well, new estimates from experts suggest that the debt ceiling could be reached closer to mid to late December or even early January, which would then allow it to be decoupled from the main funding bill. Separate and apart from that is the race to the dual infrastructure bill finishing line. Toward that end, Nancy Pelosi sent out a Dear Colleagues letter to her caucus Monday night that appeared to signal that she's caving to the Manchinima demands. Quote, "Overwhelmingly, the guidance I am receiving from members is to do fewer things well so that we can still have a transformative impact on families in the workplace and responsibly address the climate crisis. A Build Back Better agenda for jobs and the planet for the children is part of that letter," she wrote. So what programs did they suggest leaving on the cutting room floor? This will not be a pretty fight. And let me just float another idea that's already out there. Cut the amount and the time frame in half. Instead of $3.5 trillion over 10 years, make it $1.75 trillion over 5 years and front load all the good work. Follow? But all that begs the question, with so much on the line right now, why is Congress again on recess this week? The Senate returns Monday. The House is back next Tuesday. And I don't even want to tell you what the calendars for November and December look like. In other news, it's a game of my governor's worse than your governor. Texas Governor Greg Abbott, emulating Florida's Ron DeSantis, on Monday issued an executive order barring any entity in the state, including private businesses, from mandating coronavirus vaccinations for employees or customers. Back in August, Abbott ordered Texas government bodies and agencies not to require vaccinations, but said he had no intention on telling people how to run their businesses. But never mind. He reversed that position after weeks of pressure from primary opponents and others on the right who opposed President Biden's decision to require all companies with more than 100 employees to mandate vaccines for workers or test them weekly for infections. Abbott himself, by the way, is fully vaccinated, and he said the vaccine is safe, effective, and our best defense against the virus, but should always remain voluntary and never forced. Really? Did they do that for the smallpox vaccine too? Yeah. By the way, in Texas, only 52% of the population has been fully vaccinated. The state is still seeing an average of over 7,000 cases and more than 200 people dying from the disease each day. Well, surf's up in Huntington Beach, California again. Yeah, they reopened the beaches just over a week after an offshore oil spill spewed more than 131,000 gallons of the gunk into the ocean. The decision to reopen came after tests showed that the water was essentially free of toxins from the spill. And wildlife officials reported that fewer birds than feared had died due to the spill. So there's that. Indigenous activists marched outside the White House on Monday, calling for President Biden to take more drastic action against climate change. The protest launched a week of demonstrations by a coalition called Build Back Fossil Free, which is calling on the president to block new fossil fuel projects and declare a national climate emergency. Obviously, this event came on a day where there were mixed celebrations going on, some celebrating Columbus Day in honor of the explorer, about whom we've learned a lot in recent years, and many of us don't feel like celebrating him, while others celebrated Indigenous Peoples Day. President Biden last week wrote a proclamation recognizing Indigenous Peoples Day, saying, quote, "We must never forget the centuries-long campaign of violence, displacement, assimilation, and terror wrought upon Native communities and tribal nations." How about we make it official? The skies are a mess. Southwest Airlines canceled more than 350 flights on Monday, adding to an already disastrous more than 1,800 cancellations over the weekend. All of the delays were blamed on bad weather and air traffic control issues. The pilots union accused Southwest of mishandling minor challenges that other airlines easily navigate. The problem started shortly after the Southwest Airlines Pilots Association on Friday asked a federal court to prevent the company from making all employees get vaccinated. Wow. Southwest shares dropped by 4.2% on Monday. They don't want to be vaccinated? I don't want to fly their airline. And finally, Lost on Jeopardy, baby. Matt Amodio, the Yale graduate student who's been on a winning streak on Jeopardy for 38 games, who spanned two seasons and a controversy over a new host, finally lost on Monday night. Matt Amodio ended his historic run with 38 wins, more than $1.5 million in prize money. He actually finished number two on the all-time consecutive wins list, behind only Ken Jennings, who won 74 games in a row. It'll be interesting to see him up against James Holzhauser in the next Tournament of Champions. Ooh, stay tuned. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is completely listener-supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com and please click on that donate button.